Excelsior, and welcome once again, true believers, to another exciting installment of Zach and Tavy's Marvelous Adventure, where we are going through the Marvel Cinematic Universe from the very beginning. I am Zach Walliner.
And I'm Tavy Phillips.
And we are here continuing our shared journey of entertainment and learning. And what are we talking about today, Tavy?
Today we're going a little bit off the usual track, and we are going to watch some more Marvel television, Marvel Cinematic Universe television.
That's right.
We are watching the first two episodes of Agent Carter.
That's right. We have already seen Agent Peggy Carter in Captain America: The First Avenger.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have seen her one shot, which was
my favorite one shot.
Yes, I figured you would like that one. And it was sort of acted as what they call a backdoor pilot, testing the waters. And people liked it enough to justify her getting her own series. So that's where we're at today. We are watching Agent Carter the show after watching Agent Carter the one shot. And so we get more of Hayley Atwell in this character. And just a fun little aside, today I actually went to a convention with my daughter, Penny. And if you could say met, we kind of...
Oh, look at that! How perfect is the timing? Now I understand why we watch these episodes this week. That's so cool.
It's just timing. It just worked out that way. It was not planned.
That's perfect. By the way, for the people who can't see... Zach just held up a photograph of he and his daughter Penny and Hayley Atwell, who plays Agent Carter.
Yes.
Today, this very same
day we're recording. It just worked out that way in our schedule and the timing. I say it's like
amazing.
Loosely met because this was a pro photo op and it was the most expensive part of our day. But even still, I don't often do pro photo ops, but she was not offering table photos. If there's a table photos, they're usually a lot cheaper and I always opt for them unless it's like a group thing. We once did a bunch of the Ninja Turtle movie actors at another convention, so I got that group photo to get them all out of the way at once. But this time, this was the only option with her. And I was going back and forth because a friend of mine was going to the con and I pitched him last night, what would you think of we share a photo? I'll pay you half and we'll share a photo, save some money. And he was thinking it over and he just wanted to have it on his own. And I don't blame him because I do too, but I understood. But it was just me trying to negotiate that. But
just Photoshop each other out, guys. It's the 21st. What century are we in now? Our phones can do that now. You tap on a person and just erase them. No, I get it. You want to have your own experience. I understand.
And then realizing after the fact, it makes sense because they print it out there and they're probably only going to print one copy. I don't think they're going to be like, can you print another one?
Oh, yeah, that's true. You'd have to share custody. That wouldn't work.
Yeah.
That's just odd.
It worked out. I did cave with the FOMO and I got it and it was plenty expensive and then it was more expensive because there were taxes and fees, but I was like, what the heck, I'm not gonna probably have this chance again. And I figured I could say a few words to her, but it was really a very few words because she's a big name, a big draw with the nerd obviously right now. So she had her thing and you could tell we were into the line a bit, so we could see and hear how it's going. It's you walk in, stand there, 1, 2, 3, smile, click, next.
You're done.
They were moving.
I've seen other people sort of like pro shots from cons from various things, but I've never been to a con like that or done anything like that before. So I'm always curious about what that moment is like.
I'll describe it for you. We were in the front of the line waiting while the people in front of us took the picture. A woman's there. How many? I'm like, just us two. Okay, one on each side. Then the person finishes. They go, okay, go. I walk in. I hold my little Peggy Carter action figure I brought with me.
How cute.
And I quickly rush through. Oh, you're so great in this character. Oh, thank you. 1, 2, 3, smile. Click. And also your Black Mirror episode. Thank you. Out. Just trying to get the few words that I could out.
Express
the gratitude of her talent and also include something besides Peggy because everyone's just going to be there. All the nerds are going to be there for Peggy. And I just included that. Have you watched Black Mirror?
I haven't. I've meant to. It's on the list. I just haven't gotten into it yet.
It's good.
The one where it's almost sort of Twilight Zone-y.
Like a modern technologically based Twilight Zone. And
yeah, I should get into that. I'd like
some episodes are stronger than others, but when they're good, they're really good. even if most of them are kind of dark and even depressing, she has a really good, she did a really good portrayal. So I wanted to throw that in there with the Peggy Carter.
Well, they're all standalone episodes, right? They're not,
for the most
like an episodic
part, but there are connections and ties that show some might be in the same world as others. Or I don't
know. Interesting. So it's more rewarding to watch them.
Sure. And I don't know if maybe the creator intends for them all to be in the same world. I don't know if that works out with what things go on, but there definitely are ones that are tied, that there are elements that you can recognize from prior episodes.
Well, that's fun. I like that.
And the most recent season actually had a direct sequel to one from a previous one.
Okay, cool. So I can't just go in and say, oh, the Hayley Atwell one, I'll watch that one.
No, I mean, I think hers is the number
one.
You could,
yeah.
But if you want, watch it from the beginning just to get the feel of it. Anyways, we barely even
touched
Agent
Carter. I know.
Well,
let's talk about Agent Carter. Because I know we don't have any spot to stand.
No,
and that's the usual format today.
Not yet. Just
like
with
SHIELD.
I know
we don't have trivia cards either.
Yeah, just like with the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., he does show up, but he hasn't shown up yet.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So we didn't get to see him yet.
Cool.
No trivia cards for the TV shows. We do have a Penny's Corner, though. So why don't I just kick it right over her right away?
Yes.
Get the ball rolling. What do you got, Penny?
Hi, my name is Penny, and this is Penny's Corner. And today we're going to be talking about Agent Carter. And my fun fact is that the butler of the Stark family is named Jarvis, and that was the inspiration for Tony Stark's AI that is also named Jarvis, as you know from previous episodes. I just thought this was a cool thing to point out when I realized it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's Jarvis! But, yeah, that's all for now. See you next time. Bye!
Yep, that's true. We do, in this show, get introduced to one Edwin Jarvis, who is obviously the inspiration for Tony's AI, sort of a real-life butler for the Stark family that became an artificial intelligence butler down the line. So very good observation.
I sat right up on the couch. I was the Leo DiCaprio gif of Leo pointing. Yeah, the meme. I was the meme because I said, Jarvis, I know that name. Wait, okay. Howard Stark's butler somehow inspired Tony Stark's right-hand man.
Yeah, robo-butler, basically.
AI robo-butler. That makes it. Because I know it's not the same. It wasn't Paul Bettany playing Edwin Jarvis.
No.
So I knew it wasn't supposed to magically be like this guy in robot form. But I figure it's his dad's butler. He grew up with this guy, right? So that would inspire him.
I think
so that
there
was very exciting.
I think there was one of those MCU tie-in comics that fill in the gaps that might show a young Tony with Jarvis. It may have come out before this show, though, so they may have depicted Jarvis differently. So it probably doesn't all mesh in that way. But yeah, I don't know if I mentioned to you previously during one of the Iron Man episodes, Jarvis comes from Edwin Jarvis, the butler, in the comics where he's Tony's butler. Maybe he worked for Howard Pryor, but he is Tony's, and he's basically the Avengers butler. He's there at Avengers Mansion.
Okay.
So he's a modern day figure in this.
Oh, I didn't know. No, you didn't mention that. And I did not know, but that's cool.
Surprised I never mentioned.
I really like the character.
He
I loved his rapport with Peggy. I loved his whole demeanor, his quirkiness.
They do have a
Britishness.
Good, they do have a good chemistry together. And
yeah.
And maybe it comes with them both being British.
Yeah.
But I did find it funny, his introduction. It's in an alleyway, and he says, you're coming with me. Like, do you not realize how threatening that seems?
You don't do it like that.
I phrased
that
it
was
differently.
Really funny. I started, you know, I take notes while I'm watching
of
the episodes. And when she steps out of the automat, I believe it was, and gets intercepted by Jarvis, we don't know who he is at that point.
Yeah.
And I start writing, creepy British guy has pulled Peggy into an alley. And then a couple minutes later, I erased creepy British guy and I go, Jarvis!
That's right. And then she like kind of takes him out because she thinks he's a bad guy because everything points to him being a bad guy. And then a car is chasing her down practically. And then it's just Howard, hey, come with me. But we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. Just want to say we're on episode one. It's called Now Is Not the End. And we see very much like with the one shot, it starts up with flashbacks to that last interaction with her and Steve in the plane. So kind of brings all that
reminding everyone who she is, how we know her,
and how things
that
ended
important
there
moment.
And so you see she's living in the aftermath of that. She's still kind of lovelorn, still misses him, and is trying to find her place. So it's almost repeating some beats from the one shot, and I don't know how the continuity is from that. I was trying to look it up of how far apart they are, because you'd think the one shot would come after, because it ends with her, she's going off with Howard to start S.H.I.E.L.D. But here she's still doing the office duties and stuff. And apparently that's supposed to take place like a month or something before the show, but it doesn't quite add up that way.
That doesn't make sense, because the one shot really set it up for us to think, the days of sexism in the office for her are over. She's going to go help lead up this new organization. But it seems like she's still in the same place doing the same kind of file paperwork.
Yeah, so I don't know if that was another one of those one hand doesn't know what the other's doing kind of scenarios. This is produced by ABC Studios. So again, not until the era of Disney Plus was all the film and TV under the same Marvel Studios banner. But yeah,
this really felt like it took place before the one shot for that reason. But hard to be sure.
They probably couldn't get Bradley Whitford on an ongoing basis. So we meet some
new characters. That would have been awesome.
Here.
Yes. A lot of new names for me to keep track of, by the way. Lots of characters flying around. I enjoyed them, I'll just say. I want to keep watching them because I'm a little bit sucked in now. I got to know what Leviathan is. Leviathan? Because we get to the end of the second episode, not to jump too far ahead. And we still don't know who the baddie is that's the driving force behind these adventures that we've started on. So I think I'm going to have to keep watching.
Sure, yeah. I was looking it up before we talk just to see if there's a basis in the comics. And there is a Leviathan in the comics, but I think it's completely unrelated. They just took the name from it. It's some whole organization, I think, with origins in communist Russia, but it's also tied between Hydra and S.H.I.E.L.D. and alien technology. So it's a whole big complicated thing that they just grabbed that name and applied it to some bad organization in this thing that we're seeing. But as we said, looking at Peggy in her life, it's very domesticated. She's just doing things, boring things around her home and stuff. And you see the action scenes from the Captain America movie intercut with it. So it really juxtaposes what her life was and what it is now post-war. Yeah. And so she's doing her best to adjust to it. But like we said, just like in the one shot, she's really doing the menial tasks. She's looked at to do women's work and here, file this paperwork and all that. And she really wants to get in on the action. So again, she's kind of circumventing her superiors and finding time to jump into action when she can.
She's much more involved than they think she is. She's not just bringing the field agents coffee. She's sort of a secret field agent, unbeknownst to her boss and colleagues.
Yes. And we do get to see her kind of becomes the new iconic look for her in this show, where she has the blue jacket and the red hat.
Yeah.
I don't know if you came to this at all or if you have experience with this from growing up, but it reminded me of Carmen Sandiego, the big red hat.
Totally.
Gave off those vibes.
Absolutely.
And so we go along and we see Howard Stark involvement, because he's in trouble because they think he's selling weapons to enemies, which is interesting. It parallels what Tony kind of actually does, even if unknowingly, where that gets him into trouble, leading to his origin story. But we see a little more of Howard's backstory. He's kind of like Tony. They're saying he's a boy genius and things like that. And obviously he's very much in line with Tony. He's a womanizer. They show quite a bit of that. Oh, I should mention also, the first episode, at least, was written by the screenwriters of the Captain America movies. They brought them back on. So I guess because they're experts of that, what was set up with the movies. It's directed the premiere by Louis D'Esposito, and he's a bigwig at Marvel Studios now. I don't remember his actual title, but I don't know if this was before that or he just wanted to get into directing as well, being hands-on. But I think he's right up there with Kevin Feige currently.
Oh, wow. Cool. And this show starts in 2015. I did look it up. It's 2015 and it's two seasons. So 2015, 2016.
Oh, yeah. First, I was thinking, no, it's 1946. Oh, yeah.
It takes place in, whenever we wanted to. No. It's the show itself aired in 2015.
Right.
In our timeline. Wow, on our
10 years already. That's crazy time.
I know, crazy.
So Howard, he explains everything with Peggy, and there's a Red Skull name drop. We get some little familiar names in this. And also, on the note of familiar, I don't know about you, if you've ever heard this before, but they're out on the docks and there's this buoy sound effect that I feel I've heard in every dockside scene in every TV film.
I invented it, so it works.
I didn't notice it, but I'm sure you're right.
It's like, ding, ding, play, play. And they played a few times, and I feel everything I've seen where there's a dock, it's got to be a stock sound effect that people just always use. That's just a little slot.
Dock thing. I didn't notice that at all.
Offhand observation. And it's funny, again, with the sexism in the workplace and everything. She's trying to get out of doing something, and she's talking about not feeling well. And then she's like, ladies things. And the guy's like, oh, okay, go do some shopping.
Horror. Yeah, that was very comical.
He wants no part in that. And oh, back to familiar names though. I think I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but they do reach out to this scientist at one point working for Stark. Do you remember who that was?
Yes, because I wrote it down because it was familiar. The Russian dude, right?
Mm-hmm.
And his name was Vanko, Dr. Vanko.
Dr. Vanko, which is
Ant
Vanko.
And I had to look it up.
No, you didn't remember that?
I knew it was somebody. And it felt somebody Iron Man-y, like from one of the Iron Man. Sure. But I couldn't remember. It's Whiplash's dad. Right.
So in Iron Man 2, they establish he and Howard worked together making the arc reactor and everything.
Right.
And have that. That's where that resentment comes from, because they feel it was stolen, and that's what leads.
Yeah. The betrayal.
When Anton is sick and dying, and then Ivan wants to avenge him and go after Tony. But here we see him in his younger days and while he's still allied with Howard. But like we said, she goes into action, whether her male colleagues or superiors want her to or not. And we see her as a blonde. We get to see how she looks as a blonde. She's kind of got
really
this...
glam it up. She gets her American accent on.
Yes.
She's very good at doing her little characters and melting into her characters with her accents, doing the femme fatale thing.
Really a blonde bombshell kind of look.
Yeah.
So it's something different. It shows she does do a few disguises throughout the first two episodes. And
I have to mention the Automat. I have to mention the Automat.
Sure.
Because I have very personal love of the Automat.
Oh, yeah?
It's a childhood memory of mine. And I don't know if you ever went to the old H&H Automat in New York or Philadelphia, I guess.
I don't know if I have that specific one. I feel I've been to one at least at one point in my life.
But yeah.
Which,
it was a big deal for me as a little kid. My parents and our friends' parents would take us all as kids to over, and it was just very exciting. And it closed in 1991, so this is the 80s. I was young. I wanted pie from a little window. So when I saw the L&L Automat, I knew that was an homage to H&H, the famous Automat chain.
Sure.
From the old days, way before I was a child, up until I was a child. Basically ended while I was a child, but I was very excited. There's a great documentary I saw on HBO about the Automat, called The Automat, that Mel Brooks produced. And then reminiscing. So this is for us real heads, us Automat nerds.
Is that on streaming?
It's a fun watch if you got nothing better to do.
Right.
See the Automat and its history and its place in our little slice of culture there.
Maybe I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, and Peggy has her friend Angie, the waitress at the Automat, and they commiserate, and she figures a little bit more prominently in the next episode. But
yeah, she's chatty and friendly. And
yeah.
Got that classic waitress vibe.
Yeah, exactly. Very classic kind of character. But anyway, let's go back to what you were saying.
The action.
I just had to jump in. The action part
of it. She goes to this club. She's trying to get information regarding the stuff involved with Howard being set up, trying to clear his name and all that. And it involves a guy named Spider Raymond. And I realized, wow, we're getting another character named Spider way before we get the one we want in the Marvel Universe. Interesting. But we'll get to him, actually. At one point, she puts on this lipstick. She looks like she's already got lipstick on. And then she puts on lipstick, which is special lipstick, to be sort of sleep-inducing. And at one point, she's trying to deal with Spider-Raymond. And she ends up kissing him, which knocks him out pretty quickly. It's fast acting.
Yeah, really fast. And it was called, she looks at it, and the name of the lipstick, because, you know, lipsticks have shades of different names.
Right.
And so the name of this shade is Sweet Dream.
Right, I remember.
Should have been a little hint.
It was something like that. That's right. But I wonder with those things, when I see that sort of thing in movies, or it's like poison lipstick, why is it not affecting the person wearing it?
It makes no sense. I always wonder too, what are you just like religiously not licking your lips? There's no way you wouldn't also be affected by the knockout lipstick. That's crazy.
Well, I'm glad you're on the same page with me on that one.
I'm with you on that. Yep. It makes no sense.
Okay.
Nothing at all.
So I think she discovers the little globe thing, the glowing globe thing, which becomes...
She takes it out of Spider's safe after she knocks him out with the lipstick. Mm-hmm. Another orb, another MacGuffin orb. We love our orbs.
And then we get a whole bunch of them. It's not just one.
A ton of orbs. So many orbs. Oh my God. She knocks out a
dairy
goon with a stapler.
Orbs.
Yeah, that's right. It's so fun to watch her kick butt and be a superhero type of person. I loved it when she knocked out the goon with the stapler. Such an innovative use of office equipment.
Yeah, she fights that one guy who's kind of weaselly with the mustache, who's really getting things. He's a prominent villain in this stuff.
Yep.
He doesn't talk. he has, I think, that laryngotomy scar or whatever. Mm-hmm. We see a few guys with that that's somehow involved with this whole Leviathan scheme. They do that to their underlings again. But I don't think he even talks at all. The one guy talks with a vocoder thing, but I think this guy's just a silent menace. But she manages to get away from him, but he does shoot Spider Raymond in the head. And then when she gets to her apartment, she had this roommate, Colleen, who was kind of sick in bed, and he got her too.
Yeah, it was a bummer. Very sad. Poor Colleen, R.I.P.
Totally innocent and
didn't deserve that.
And so then she's got to kind of find a new place to live. This guy loves shooting people in the head. I guess it's the easiest way to kill someone quickly, but we see him go through a whole bunch of people through the course of these two episodes.
Yep, a lot of people with a bullet in the head from this guy.
Some killed off screen, but then we just see the bodies lying there with the blood.
Yep,
that's
brutal.
Rough stuff. At a point, she is going through some files, and there's a thing on Project Rebirth, which was the experiment that made Captain America, and she sees the little picture of scrawny Steve and brings back more memories, more flashbacks to that final interaction where we kind of see the tail end of it, where he says, this is my choice, and he crashes the plane and gets cut off. And in there, she also...
Yeah, they're really doing a good job of tying this show to Captain America. I'm sure they're thinking, if people are going to tune in, let's make sure we're showing them, this is Captain America, the continuing adventures. There he is. There he is again. Like, really tying it very strongly.
It's clearly her show, but a big part of her character is her connection to him.
Yeah.
So she's not never was a damsel in distress, but there was a real love between the two of them, and their opportunity to take it further was robbed of them from his heroic sacrifice, taking down the Red Skull's jet with all those bombs. I forgot to mention earlier, on the note of Steve, she's in that blonde disguise and she's dancing with the guy wants to dance with her.
Yeah.
And she says, I'm afraid I'd only step on your toes. And I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, if you remember, I feel like that's a line that was discussed between her and Steve. That's another little sweet call.
That's the last thing that he says, I think, when he gets cut off from her. He's saying, I don't want to step on you. And then that's it. Because they showed that part of the flashback. But I didn't pick it up that she said that to the guy.
Yeah, it shows it made a mark with her. Yeah. And she carries that with her.
Yeah.
But going back to that box, she finds this little thing, this Vita Ray detector. And we see it's got Professor Erskine's name on it.
Oh, that's right. Return of Erskine.
Another familiar name, because obviously the Vita Rays were a key component in the Captain America experiment after he gets injected with the serum. So now she's using that because I guess they found there was a tie with Vita Rays to these little globes and things like that. So that helps her kind of track them in their usage in making these. Are they still called bombs if they cause implosions? I don't know. Or
interesting. I don't know. Well, first everything seems to explode and then everything gets sucked back in.
Yeah.
So is it an explosion? Is it a bomb? Implosion bomb.
Yeah. Oh, like an importer exporter. It's an explosion importer.
It does everything, this orb, this brand of orb, I should say, because there's a lot of them. It's not just one orb, not the sacred orb of the Guardian of the Galaxy MacGuffin. It's quite a few. And it's the chemical, I can't remember. I kept trying to write it down and not getting it right. Like
amine. Yeah.
Something amine.
Maybe I should have written it down, but
it's a real mean chemical. We know that.
Definitely capable of causing some mean stuff. Also, we've seen this, that rat guy, he's often at a typewriter and it's somehow a two-way typewriter. And
that's exactly what I was going to bring up, actually. I loved the two-way typewriter.
On the same way.
It's kind of spooky.
It is definitely spooky.
Like,
we don't know who's on the other
first
end.
Time.
Oh, sorry, I talked over you.
No, we don't. It's a mystery. But it reminded me of the first time I ever went in a chat room and computer talked back to me. I remember I was like 13 years old and I was in like a Genie. Do you remember Genie, the old?
No, what was that?
That was like CompuServe, Genie, AOL.
Okay. I mean, I know AOL. Really. I know AOL. Yeah. That was where I got
of course,
my first.
AOL. Well, before AOL, there were these older kind of similar social networking bulletin boardy type of things you would dial up into. And one of them was called Genie. And that was the first time I ever talked to anybody live on a computer.
Wow.
And it was in a Genie chat room. So seeing that typewriter reminded me of like the typewriter's talking back. Like it must have been so mind blowing. But of course, you know, these people have seen gadgets and people flying. So a typewriter talking back is really not so mind blowing, I guess, in this particular world. It's wacky though.
But yeah, at the same time, it does make you wonder because yes, it's a superhero comic booky world. And there was stuff even in the Captain America first movie that's beyond what could have been possible then. But this seems like a simple thing, but then also has some greater tech involved. But we also don't, they don't really show or explain how it's working.
Like, just accept that there's some connection with the typewriter to some other place.
Yeah, sometimes they over-explain or sometimes they under-explain, I guess. Because I would think they could show if there was some sort of wire and it's connected to something that they would kind of indicate how this two-way system is working. But it's just one of those things you kind of have to accept on its face, it seems.
Yeah, they just say, it's cool looking. We're just going to throw it in and let people wonder. It's not that important, the mechanism.
True. Also, Roxxon plays a part in this. If you remember, that was at the gas pump in Coulson's little one-shot. Funny thing happened on the way to Thor's hammer.
I did not remember that.
Yeah, it's not a big important detail in the grand scheme of the things we discussed, but
they're an oil company, so it's a good tie-in.
Big company and arrival of Stark Industries in the comics. So now we get a little closer look at them. When she's investigating them, we see James Urbaniak.
Love to see James Urbaniak. I was so happy to see the great character actor James Urbaniak.
So he's involved in these orbs and their distribution or production or something. And she sort of zaps a thing to blind him and then chases after the other guy, who I think was another one with a scar. And he had the vocoder and he's all like, Leviathan is coming.
It's coming.
Very ominously. And
drops the bomb. Then she runs.
That explodes the Roxxon plant, basically. And the episode, as it's wrapping up, we get her back at the diner again. And even beyond the workplace, she's fighting sexism. There's a guy being all sweet cheeks, toots with her,
Angie. Her
buddy.
Yep.
And
I love that.
She takes a fork and is like stabbing it right in a certain little spot that causes him pain. And she's explaining how if she drives it in further, all it's going to do. And then she finishes saying, tip generously. And then the waitress looks at him and he's taking out the bills.
lots of cash, visibly. That was great. They had to, you know what? They were giving us the thing that everyone, I'm sure, loved about the one shot, or at least a lot of people, women, I'm sure, loved about the one shot, which was her fighting sexism and getting the upper hand on these sexist jerks. So they had to include a triumphant moment of that in the pilot of her series, I think.
Definitely. It's a big driving theme with her, obviously, because it's in that era. She is a strong woman agent, and that's just sort of addressing what the time was like. And I'm sure there were women like this back then, maybe not secret super spy agents, but they were bucking the trend of what was expected.
Absolutely.
So then we have the second episode is called Bridge and Tunnel. And we get to hear the Captain America Adventure Program, a little radio play. Comes up here and there throughout the show. It's fun. We get little snippets here of Star Spangled Man, Alan Menken's theme song from the USO.
That I quite enjoyed, as I recall from the movie.
I'm quite a fan of that song, so it was always nice when it comes up. And you see, it's very in line with the sort of thing that would have been going on that day where there's the damsel in distress and then Captain America comes in to save the day and he's very this talking, I'll help you. And you hear the woman's Betty Carver, and clearly we know who it's modeled after, but not really, because she is a damsel in distress and she's always needing to be saved. And you hear, oh, Red Skull is going to get you. Oh, yes, mine, this, that. So the very over-the-top German caricatures and the very strong man voice for the Captain America character.
Fun business, too. They give us some shots of the sort of behind the scenes of the radio show, make the sound effect stuff, punching meat, breaking glass, all sorts of
Foley
work.
And it's that part particularly was fun because it's interspersed with Peggy fighting. So you see it juxtaposed with the fake fight and all the little things being used for sound effects while she's actually really doing some butt kicking.
That was a clever little bit.
And after she's left looking for a new place from having Colleen killed and trying to get out of there, Howard is trying to help her out. And he has Jarvis show her this place, little, not his actual home, but a side place. But it's clearly just a
where
place.
Where he entertains.
Yeah. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Wink, clearly, wink.
His hookup place. And Jarvis is showing her around. And then she sees these little flimsy lingerie outfits and role play outfits in the closet.
The closet is full of clothing. And she grabs a sort of lab coat, I guess, doctor looking.
Yes, so she does, she does grab this, not for the usual intended purposes, but for actual
for spy work.
To be it for a disguise. So we get to see two sort of sex symbol archetypes from her, the big blonde bombshell and then the sort of nerdy, kind of like naughty librarian almost.
Yes. Yeah, so as the when she's the health inspector.
In glasses. And so once again, putting on the American accent for that, which is always fun to see when she's doing that and how it sounds. in general, it's always amusing when you hear people from other countries try to do their American accents.
Yeah. Or not.
I mean,
hers is pretty good, I think. She didn't do that hit the R's really hard thing that they tend to do when they're...
Howdy, partner.
Partner.
Very cowboy southern.
She wasn't doing this, whatever it was that Ben Kingsley was doing that drove me crazy.
Oh, that was that was something else altogether.
Was that Iron Man 3? Was it 3?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. So she did good. I gave her high marks for her American accents.
Hey, you don't even realize sometimes when actors are from other countries and they're playing Americans and then you learn, oh, it was a British guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happens a lot. My next note is just about... It just says some massive ice cubes, because if you remember, a few of the cops are sitting down, I think maybe with the head of rocks on.
Yes, a guy, a really tall desk. They're sitting in front of his huge desk, and he's
and he has a
making them drink at 10 in the morning.
Grabs these ice cubes, and it's just one per cup, and it's just a massive ice cube. I feel like that would not leave much room for the drink itself. Just one single ice cube per drink, and they are big ones.
Fancy, fancy ice cubes.
Indeed. And we see more of Peggy trying to get around being noticed and doing secret stuff that her colleagues shouldn't know. At one point, she's trying to get into someone's desk. She's got a little lockpick gizmo, but then that damn phone's ringing and it keeps ringing.
Phone.
And she's getting distracted. I think maybe she bangs her head while she's under the desk, but she manages to get away with it. And then my next note, it's funny. I don't think this was intentional, but it kind of rhymes. I said, Urbaniac is back. And then I have an arrow. Briefcase whack. Urbaniac is back, leads to briefcase whack. So we see him again where she's in disguise. Or is she still? No, I don't think she's...
No, she's not in disguise. What happened was she was roped into... They're scanning the Roxxon employees for VitaRay.
Yeah, so they're using the VitaRay scanner
to see if any of them were at the explosion of the refinery, or if it was an inside job. And they say they need her to scan the women because it wouldn't be proper, or no, it wouldn't be appropriate. That was it. It wouldn't be appropriate for the men, no matter how much they want to scan the women. It happened to have another woman scanning it. So she's like, okay. And then she's there scanning the ladies when we see Urbaniak again, and we see he's playing Van Aert.
Yes, Van Aert. That's his name tag. And he's
somebody Van Aert. I don't know that we...
Yeah, I don't know if they revealed his first name. They just refer to him as his last name.
Yeah.
And he's wearing sort of a lab, like a full lab outfit, full kind of white suit. Not white suit like you go wearing to a fancy occasion, but it's, I think it's full bodied white thing of doing science stuff.
Right. Science thingy.
So
science coveralls or something.
So that, whatever it is. There's not much rays coming off of it, but then Peggy points out, oh, maybe the clothes he wore to work that day.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as that comes out, he goes off and running.
He makes a break for it.
Caught.
Exposing his guilt.
Exactly.
Immediately. What a dum-dum.
She finds a alternate route through the building and catches up and just grabs someone's briefcase and whacks him with it. Knocks him down.
This is a really nasty scene with the SSR. SSR, is that it?
Yes. So the guys are then... They have him. They want to get information from him. The guy's talking about the whole big fish analogy, and you're not the biggest fish. Can you give us a bigger fish? He's obviously resisting. The guy, Dooley, who's the chief,
right?
He's got a literal carrot and stick
on
his desk. That's usually a metaphorical thing, but I guess he really wanted to
drive the point home.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You stole the words from me. But he said the offer expires when he leaves the room. So guy's not talking. Urbaniac's not talking. Van Aert. And so he takes the carrot with him, leaves the stick behind. And then the blonde guy, whose name is escaping me at the moment. Do you know his name?
I think it's something like Thompson, I want to say. Thompson.
Seems like it could be something generic.
Something like that. Played by Chad Michael Murray, who I don't really know, but I think he was one of those CW guys back in the day.
Yeah.
He looked familiar.
Sounds about right.
Renamed CW dude. So he's left with the stick.
And then he makes good use of that stick.
Yeah.
Not beating him with the stick, but he has him bite it. And then he just goes down wailing on him, punching him in the face left and right. But I still think he doesn't talk. I think he's still...
Yeah, he doesn't give it up because that's how they say it. He doesn't have anything. He would have given it up. They really went after him. And he's not playing a nice character, particularly James Urbaniak. But you still feel sorry for him.
It was a bit overkill, maybe.
It was over the top.
And a running plot is the waitress, again, befriending her a lot. She's trying to help her find a new place. And she's talking about moving in that the place she lives. There's a lot of good girls there. And it's fun. And you'd fit in. And you'd be my neighbor. I'll give you a cup of sugar or whatever. And you could tell.
It almost feels like a really hard sell there. Like, why does she want Peggy so bad? badly. I know that they're friends, but it almost seems desperate.
Maybe, but maybe she just needs a friend, and I think she's trying to be a friend to her and look after her. But I think you can kind of tell Peggy's looking out for her.
She's still guilt.
After what she's seen with Colleen, she doesn't want to put this other woman friend in danger, let alone the other women who live there. And I guess she feels that if she were there, something like that could happen again. So she's being hesitant with that. We did mention the fight scene where it's shown back and forth cuts with the Captain America radio program where she's fighting someone that she's encountered, McPhee, after some investigating. Did you notice who played McPhee?
No.
Was he at all familiar? His face, voice.
There was something familiar about him, but who was he? Not enough for me to go, hey, who is that guy, and look it up. So maybe not.
Well, I did recognize him and I looked it up and confirmed it. That's Devin Rattray, who portrayed Buzz in the Home Alone movies.
Oh my God, that was Buzz?
Yep, the jerky older brother picking on Kevin.
I almost want to go back and rewatch that bit. See him again. That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's an iconic role.
Well, it's nice to see him get a beating because that character is awful.
Finally, somebody gets buzzed. It was a comical bit of business with him being tied to the chair and then escaping with the chair still on him.
And then when they go back for him, he's gone. And then you see him running down the road with the chair still attached, and the SSR cops find him.
Yep.
Now more goes on with the orbs. And dairy truck, and Jarvis and Peggy are teamed up trying to take this thing down. And
what's his name? Lee. It took me until almost the end of the episode to realize that Leet Brannis, this name they keep saying, the typewriter types out fine, Leet Brannis. Yes. You got to find Leet Brannis. And we've also been seeing Leet Brannis throughout the episode. And I didn't realize till they meet up at McPhee's house with the milk truck that he. The guy with the Y scar, the non-blonde, silent guy, is Leet Brannis.
Oh, I don't know if I made that connection.
Until that second, I was like, oh, that's Leet Brannis. And they say, Mr. Brannis. I was like, oh, that's, I don't know why. It didn't seem clearer to me. Were we supposed to have realized it was Leet Brannis?
There's a lot going on. There's a lot of characters we're getting to know. Things could get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah. I mean, it was fine. It wasn't a bit like, it was just like, oh, okay, click. There's Leet Brannis. Oh, he's switching sides now. So he says he'll give Peggy information in exchange for protection. He's afraid, obviously, of Leviathan. Very, very afraid. Yes. But they've got him in a corner. So he agrees to switch sides. And then they're all driving away in the milk truck with all the bombs, the orb bomb thing in it.
And the ratty guy kind of catches up and he's
jumps on the top of the truck. Great action sequence with Peggy going up there and duking it out on the roof of the speeding milk truck.
Yes.
That was fun.
But then she stabs his hand, I think, into the truck.
Mm-hmm.
But then, now this I'm going to bring up because this is something that's come up in many films and TV shows, comics, cartoons, that me and my younger brother Harry have pointed out. And I don't know if he was the one who first brought it up or coined the term. But I remember I tried to look this up if it's on TV Tropes, that website, because that's a site that documents all sorts of fictional storytelling.
Love that site.
And maybe I just never found it and what it's called. I tried to look it up. I feel it has to be because it's something that's come up so often. I would think on there it could be called Think of the Fish because it's or just drop it in the water. Because so often in things, movies, TV shows, when there's an explosion and it's going to go off one way or the other, you can't stop it. You get it into the water. You see the water explode. Boom. And oh, phew, the day is saved. But there's aquatic life. There's fish in there. What about them? Think of the fish.
I love it. I love that. That's definitely a trope. I love the name Think of the Fish for that trope. I'm always going to think of it. I will always think of the fish from this moment on whenever this happens.
I'm glad I can make that difference at least. I actually have in my phone a note that I've had for years, and I wrote this down, I think, when this came out, so that shows how long this note has
10 years,
if not longer. Let me see if I could pull up, just because we're on the topic. Let me see. Got a lot of new notes in this thing. The notes are shared across devices, so Penny's put apps on the iPad, and then I see them in my phone. Okay, here. Drop it in the water examples. The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight Rises. The climax of that. Batman gets a bomb dropped.
Remember that.
Muppets Most Wanted has that at the end. Agent Carter episode 2. There it is. Iron Man 3 Prelude number 2, page 15. So that's one of those tie-in comics.
Okay.
Well, there's an upcoming project on here, so I guess this is not the only MCU instance. So I won't reveal that one.
A movie that I've yet to watch. Okay. Cool.
Then I see Amazing Spider-Man number 42, page 13. Amazing Spider-Man 137, page 15. Amazing Spider-Man number 523, last two pages. So it's come up a few times with an Amazing Spider-Man alone. And Princess Peach Showtime, the Bell Tower detective bit. So that's a recent Nintendo game where you play as Princess Peach. So even
fine for you to spoil Nintendo games for me. That is cool.
And those are just scraping the surface, I'm sure. Those are just
amazing.
I've personally seen, witnessed, but
this is probably a bad time for me to confess to you that I've never actually watched Muppets Most Wanted. I, a supposed Muppet fanatic.
That doesn't surprise me. A lot of Muppet fans seemingly didn't, because that was a big bomb at the box office. And probably
it's all my fault. I kind of see it. But now I know, when I finally get around to watching it, if that ever happens, there's going to be something in the water.
Sorry to spoil that for you.
I had time to watch it. It's my own fault.
Yeah, it's only 11 years old.
Yep, that's all.
Seemingly put the nail in the coffin of future Muppet movies, at least for the time being.
Painful subject.
Since we're on this topic, in the Muppet fan community, we talk about...
I woke the beast, guys.
What'd you say?
I awoke the beast. I mentioned Muppets to Zach. This is all my fault, but I love it. Bring it on.
Marvel is probably my second biggest fandom.
I know.
For anybody who doesn't already know.
We first bonded over Muppet stuff, I believe.
Yeah?
You and I. Yeah, that's when we used to DM about Muppets. I know, we're such nerds. We're just like, hey, what's up, Muppets?
Well, even me and my wife, our first discussions on Facebook before we even met, it was a new Muppet Christmas special was coming out.
So that was one of the first.
I think it's part of why my sister-in-law and the mutual friend that we had thought we'd be a good match, because we were into that sort of stuff and maybe other nerdy stuff. So we were set up that way. But we were talking about it was Letters to Santa. It was a TV special that came out, I guess, at the end of 2008.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was going to say is Muppet fandom these days, we're often complaining about Disney. Not doing much with the characters or mishandling them and stuff. And those are valid points, but also a friend of mine says, look, after the failure of Muppets Most Wanted, they could have just given up and done nothing, because that really didn't do
it. Certain, I guess, but...
They might have said, well, we gave it our best shot. We gave them two movies. First one did okay. Second one, not so much. And all right, put these characters in the Disney vault. Maybe one day we'll figure something out. But
I believe, not having seen the movie... I believe that if it had been a quality piece of work, that the people would have come to it, and it would have, I believe it's the movie's fault.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you there. I'm going to disagree.
Oh, is it great?
I think it's better than the 2011 film. People love that reboot because it fills them with nostalgia for what they love about the Muppets.
That's why I love it.
The 2011 movie was Jason Segel's self-insert fan fiction. Basically, Jason Segel and Amy Adams, their roles and the role of Walter, the new Muppet character, are much more prominent than the Muppets that were there to see.
Yes.
So it's got good stuff in it. It's got some funny gags. It also has some stuff that's not as good. And I think a lot of people who were kids at the time, and that was their first exposure to Muppets, love it because they got those ruby glasses they're wearing looking back on it. But I think Most Wanted is a superior film.
You know what? I trust your judgment as a Muppet aficionado and expert, and I will give it a shot with an open mind. And cool. I'm happy to blame Disney, though, for not doing the right thing with the Muppets.
They've had hits and misses since then, but they still seem to not have cracked the code. We all knew it would never be the same after Jim Henson died, but you'd think under Disney, they could figure something out. But I think not having a core creative figure being part of it and guiding it is a big part of the problem. Because Jim Henson, he was not just the boss running the company. He was in the trenches with those guys, just like any performer. So
creative leader. So I think we need to make sure that we put a big, in all capital letters, Muppet tangent in the show notes for this episode so people can see for themselves. Because you're leaving it in. It's very important stuff we're talking about here.
Again, this is our show. We can go on tangents. We can do what we want to. That's what I say.
But this is the perfect illustration of how Muppet people and Marvel people are the same people. It's Zach. And now, kind of me. So these are things.
Google gobble. Love them. We accept you.
one of us. Okay.
So back to Agent Carter, the real topic at hand. So they drop it in the water. The implosion takes place with only fish seemingly being really hurt. Not that we see that. Not that anybody who makes these things cares about the fish. But that happens. And then we get a nice little heart-to-heart between Jarvis and Peggy, where he's trying to tell her...
Wait, you skipped Mr. Brannis, because somebody did get hurt.
Oh.
Right?
Okay, you're right. Yes, I left out the villain. So they're trying to talk to him, get information out of him, and he's basically sputtering away, but he leaves a mark in the sand. Mm-hmm. It starts to look like the top of a heart, but then he kind of goes a swish through the middle. We're not sure what that is exactly.
Yeah, and mysterious then, symbol.
As people
but like
come,
a little cliffhanger almost. Like, what's the mysterious symbol?
Definitely. Then but when other people are coming, Peggy kind of wipes it away just to make sure no one else sees this clue. But then, as I said, Jarvis and Peggy have a heart-to-heart, and he's kind of encouraging her to say... Because she's saying Steve was so perfect and everything like that. And he's like, from what I've heard from Howard, he leaned on you a lot.
Right.
And
he let people help him. And now you have to let people help you. I thought that was a great scene. It's very touching. It connected to her situation with Colleen and the overarching Steve stuff and the emotional baggage she's been carrying around. And it really showed how insightful Jarvis is and how much of a connection they're starting to have as just great partners there. Yeah, a great team. So I thought that was a wonderful scene. It really tied together a lot of threads. And he said, he said, you got to let people help you. Just like Steve did. He let you help him. You got to let people help you.
It's a good lesson.
And then the next scene, of course, she learned the lesson because she allows Angie to introduce her to the apartment maven or something. It's like the Marquis de la apartment.
Yeah. She gives in to her kind of pressure and is going to go get an apartment in her building. And we hear Angie kind of mentioning the different girls, so to speak. And at one point, the first one I think she says is Mary, who's a legal secretary at Goodman, Kurtzberg, and Holloway. That is a law firm in the comics, though it's also been Goodman, Lieber, Kurtzberg, and Holloway. And I believe it does become that fully at a much later point in our timeline. Goodman is Martin Goodman, who is the publisher of Marvel way back in like the Captain America days in the early days. Kurtzberg is Jacob Kurtzberg, aka Jack Kirby.
Oh,
and Lieber is Stanley Lieber, Stan Lee. But
I never knew their real names.
Yes, he was not mentioned in this one. Right now in the timeline, 1946, it's just Goodman, Kurtzberg, and Holloway. Holloway, I believe, is just a fictional Marvel character, not named for anybody. And then the Lieber does get added down the line.
It's not a little sideways spot to stand, unfortunately.
No.
It could have been, but it's not.
Not at this point. But she says Mary's the legal secretary there. Then Evelyn is also a secretary. And then Sarah, do you want to say what Sarah is?
I don't know.
You don't remember that?
Remember.
She's like, and that's Sarah. She's a slut.
Oh, how did that go over my head? I have to stop taking notes while I'm watching the episode because I'm missing things. It's not good.
You can always go back 10
seconds.
Gotta
be away. Yeah, I do a lot of rewinding. I will say that.
We gotta take
I should mention Miriam. Miriam being the woman that she has to interview in order to get a slot in the apartment. I feel like somehow she's going to come back. Again, at the character. She seemed to have, like, what was the point of Miriam? She was also played by this character actress that I just see everywhere and I never remember her name. It's somebody named Megan Fay. I looked it up. And I always remember her because she played a character on Roseanne for 2 seasons. Every time I see her, I'm like, oh, it's a chick from Roseanne. It was a very small role in Roseanne. But anyway, I was like, there's a chick from Roseanne again.
Yeah, it's interesting when you notice people.
I looked up, like,
things.
Character actor trivia or whatever.
Yeah, like I said, Buzz from Home Alone.
Yeah.
Second episode.
It's very exciting.
And then you saw this woman. So it's one of those fun little side things. Spot the character.
I love it. We love our character actors around here. James Urbaniak, a great character actor. So
Stan is not the only one who gets spotted, it seems.
That's right.
And we wrap up this episode where someone's looking through the wreckage and they see a license plate. And that's kind of the cliffhanger for the next one as some sort of clue that they can use to get more information. And that'll do it for the first two episodes of Agent Carter's first season, the television show. So
I don't think they're very long seasons either.
I don't think so. I mean, modern TV in general.
Yeah.
It's usually, more, 8 episodes or something.
To me, that's more manageable. I think I'm going to keep going with this.
Yeah, I figured you might. I know you mentioned you were kind of interested in doing so with S.H.I.E.L.D. I don't know if you've had a chance to watch
it. Yeah, and I'd still be interested to go back. I haven't yet. I think I'd probably go back to this one first before
S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah, yeah, I definitely would like it. So.
I didn't dislike S.H.I.E.L.D. and I like the characters and all that, but something about that retro pastiche milieu thing. I like these period pieces.
It's right, and this is a strong female character, so I'm sure that resonates.
Yeah, love me a strong female character. Yes.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you, when it comes to the TV shows, my bias might show a little because how I handle one show or the other. There's one particular show that I feel I want us to watch the whole season before we do the episode. Whereas these we've been sampling and maybe we'll get back to it one day, maybe sort of, kind of. But
that's intriguing. I wonder what show it is. I hope it's Moon Knight because I really want to see Moon Knight.
Well, that one we could do the whole season because, again, we'll probably have Harry on as a guest and it gives us more to talk about. Gotta have Harry for all things Moon Knight.
Love it. I just love Oscar Isaac, but I'm very happy to talk to Harry about Oscar Isaac. Sounds great
definitely.
To me.
Definitely. So, yeah, I hope it's not going to be too much of a burden. Hopefully, we'll be very caught up with our recordings, so it won't keep us from recording for too long because it's more
it's
to
take
watch.
More time. Yep.
But I think it's worthwhile in at least one example I'm thinking of because I think you're just not going to get the full scope of it if we just do 2 episodes and you're not going to fully appreciate the show.
Okay. I'll wait and see how that unfolds when we get closer to that show.
Oh, let me pull up my Word document. I totally lost track. I think I know what's coming next, but let me just quickly double check. Oh, no. It's actually the thing I'm talking about.
Oh, is it a show? Are we watching another show?
Yeah. So, as it turns out, this show is the next thing on our docket. I was thinking it was going to be Avengers Age of Ultron. That is the one after this. The next assignment is Daredevil.
Daredevil.
On Netflix. And okay. I hold this in the highest esteem of Marvel television. I think the Netflix era, they had a set of shows, 4 different characters were the stars, and then they had their own team-up series, kind of like how we had movies introducing characters and then Avengers movie with them together. Daredevil is unquestionably the strongest of the bunch, and I've revisited it. I don't know if I've rewatched all 3 seasons twice or more, but I think you're going to like it. It's a little different, but I definitely think it's worth watching the whole first season. Again, it might just be 8 episodes, or maybe it's 12 or 13, actually. Either way, watch them when you can.
Okay.
You do one a day, whatever. We're still, we still have plenty to work with. So even if we miss a week of recording, it's no big deal. But again, I really think it'll be worthwhile to tackle the whole season.
I'm interested now because you like it so much. So I want to see what it is that you like. Okay, it's 13 episodes per season. So let's do it. Well, this is going to teach me not to sit there and make so many notes because I need to just sit there and watch the show.
Yeah,
I absorb.
I take probably too many notes too, but I want to make sure we have stuff to talk about. And
yeah, I'm only going to take a note if it's a thought that I really think is worth sharing rather than me trying to remember the plot of every little detail.
Exactly. You got to pick and choose a little bit.
That's right.
But things that stand out or things you have specific, unique thoughts about, because that's a lot of what this podcast is hearing your take and what you think of different characters and scenes and how things play out, storylines. So yeah, we'll get there. We'll make it work one way or the other. So I'm looking forward to that. I actually just rewatched Daredevil not all that long ago. It's relatively recent. It was still a little while ago, but I think I watched all of it with my wife a little while back, but I don't mind revisiting it. It's really good. So
all right.
I hope you find that to be the
same.
All right. So until then, this was a pleasure as always. Thank you for doing it. And thank you, audience, for listening. I hope you've been enjoying the show. And if you have, please leave a rating and subscribe.
5 stars, please.
Yes,
really
obviously.
We care. But we especially care if it's 5 stars.
Yeah, if that's how you feel, please let us know.
We can take it.
But yeah, I should say at this point in this episode, we're out there.
We've dropped.
By the time you hear this, we'll have been out there for a while. But in real time, our show is up and available. So it's exciting. And we've been getting some feedback. So we'll keep chugging along and make them.
Yeah.
So I hope
we're really excited. We're happy with the feedback so far, and we hope that you like what we're doing here.
Yes, we hope you'll keep
listening. If you don't like it, feel free to leave a comment on our Facebook or one of our social medias. You don't have to leave a rating on podcast
or just keep it to yourself completely. We don't need your negativity.
We're positive people here. We're very wholesome. I don't know.
No one's forcing you to listen.
We're adorable. So be nice to us.
But seriously, thank you all for listening. Hope you'll continue to tune in. And until then, we will see you next time. Thanks.
See you next time.
Bye. Zach and Tavy's Marvelous Adventure is produced and co-hosted by Zach Walliner and Tavy Phillips. Featuring Penny Walliner. Edited by Zach Walliner. Theme music by Luis Humanoid. Cover art by Chris Giarusso. If you enjoy our show, please be sure to leave a nice review and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice, and follow us on all the major social media sites and apps at Zach Tavy Marvel. That's ZachTavieMarvel. Thanks again for tuning in. Nuff said.